Well, let's go ahead and get started, and folks will probably drift in as the day goes on. We had a nice, beautiful, sunny day today, so people are out enjoying God's wonderful wilderness around us here, and I don't blame them. So, but I also appreciate you being here and the conversation that's ahead for us. And the conversation, the topic that we'll share together over the course of five sessions, don't get worried about that, is leadership. And I'm looking forward to finding out what that's going to mean for us over the course of our conversation today. And then those of you that would like to pop in and out during the week, what it may come to mean to you by the end of the week. There are, millions of URLs that are out there that will be tagged with the word leadership. And there are thousands of books. There are many, many definitions of leadership, and the one thing I can assure you is that they do not agree, and so we may not agree over the course of our conversation, but it is a topic that people are fascinated by and they're interested in. You also won't find the word leadership tied to any word in the Bible, and over the course of the week, we may discover that leadership, as at least it's theorized, really has nothing to do with being a Christian, or we may discover that there are some principles that folks are learning in their research on leadership that might inform our work in the church. So my goal is over the course of the week is to engage in a variety of conversations with you, give you information, and over the course of the week determine, you know, whether or not we can apply or learn from the principles of leadership in our work in the church and work in our daily lives. So my name is Mark Heckler, and I serve as a president of Valparaiso University, and it's a privilege to be at that university. It's a wonderful place to live and to work, a wonderful community, and a great place for us as a community to practice leadership with one another. One question I wanted to ask of each of you is, how many of you find yourself in a leadership role, whether it's in your church, as a volunteer, in your school? How many of you are? So it's not uncommon for many of us in our various roles to be engaged in leadership, and we'll talk a little bit about what that means over the course of our time together. We have five sessions this week. Every one of them is independent. You can drop in and drop out. It's not like watching 24 where you get lost. So you can feel free to drop in and drop out as the week goes on, and I'd encourage you to do that. And here's the arc of the week. Today we're going to try to figure out what leadership is. What is this treasure that we call leadership, and how does it work, and what informs it? Tomorrow we'll tell a story. We're going to look at the life of one person who many people called a leader. He certainly was engaged in an extraordinary adventure and led a group in an extraordinary time. That's Ernest Shackleton. So we're going to learn a little bit about him and whether or not there are leadership lessons in his journey with the ship, the Endurance, in Antarctica. So we'll do that tomorrow. The next day, we're going to discuss a conceptual framework for leadership, and it's one that I think will be informed by our conversation today, and we'll see what you folks think about that. The fourth day, tools you can use. There's another framework that I'd like to work through with you that I think you might find useful as a leader, and then the last day, Christian leadership. What might that be? And we'll debate that. So that's the last day. So that's the arc of the week. So what I'd like to do, going to be very interactive, going to be very conversational. I don't proclaim to be an expert. I'm a student of leadership. I have to practice it every day in terms of what I do in my life, and many of you do as well. So we're going to grapple with this together. So if you could just identify somebody who's just going to be conversation partner with you today. It doesn't matter if it's somebody you know or somebody you don't know, but just identify somebody. So you've got your partner. The second task is to identify, just in your mind, or if you're going to be journaling, some of you brought things to write with, and so if you want to journal, there'll be some opportunity to do that as well. Identify a person that you know that you think is an example of effective leadership. To think about why you picked the person and what is it that made them effective. And that's what I'd like you to share with your partner. Why did you pick them and what is it that made them effective? So just go ahead and share that with each other. Okay, let me just check in with you. If each of you have had a chance to share, would you just discuss for a moment what it is that you, in terms of what you thought was effective, what did you have in common about that, those characteristics of effectiveness, and what was different? And just take a minute and check in with each other right now. Okay, let's just check in now. Some things that, in terms of the descriptions that you had about your leaders, that you had in common. Right, what were some things that you shared in common about your stories about those leaders? Anybody want to throw them out there? Yes.
Vision and good communication.
Right, vision, communication, some other things you shared.
Strategic planning.
All right, so strategic planning or a strategic focus.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Listening.
Listening.
Listening to people and being willing to hear that and remember it.
Okay. To listen and then internalize, keep. Okay?
An ability to bring a group together, to connect, to hear, and then connect the
right.
pieces, the ideas.
Pulling ideas and people together around an idea or concept. Other things in common.
Complete confidence in your purpose or mission or problem. Mm-hmm.
So the leader had absolute confidence in the mission
right.
of the organization.
Almost passion.
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 They were able to create a sense of trust.
All right, so it was someone that you trusted.
Mm-hmm.
People in the organization trusted.
We talked about someone who gives freedom, but also a lot of grace.
Freedom, but?
A lot of grace.
Freedom and grace.
Positive attitude.
Can't hear you, sorry.
Positive attitude.
Okay. All right, some things where you may have differed. Any places where you differed in terms of how you thought about what effectiveness was? Yes.
Maybe specific God-given skills. Somebody can remember names really well, other people can focus on something else but the names.
Right, those things that might be a talent that God has given to one individual, the ability to remember names, all those names, right? That might be something that is a particular gift.
Close-mindedness.
Close-mindedness, right? So there, that was a difference between your two descriptions.
You talked about charisma and that personal trait where someone walks in the room and the room stops because that person has entered the room, and that was both positive and negative.
Yes.
Jim Jones was the example, and then maybe the president of Del Brazo of the University.
If you're talking about O.P. Kretzmann, I would put you there. So that sense of charisma. We'll talk about that a little later.
I think one difference we identified was one leader directly asked people to support the vision and the direction. Another one was less.
All right, so maybe approach about around vision. It's one thing I can tell you as a president when you are put in that kind of an office, and you may as a pastor, those of you that are pastors experience that as well. As soon as you arrive, within seconds, maybe even before you come, people want to know, what is your vision? The biggest mistake you can make is to say what that is. That would be one person's view. The other would be, get it out there. Let's get on board. Right? And effective leaders work both ways. Anything else that emerged in your conversation you thought was interesting or you thought the group might benefit from hearing?
We talked about intelligence.
I'm sorry?
Intelligence.
Intelligence. Great. Well, I think we're going to actually cover all this in our conversation. So I'd like to just introduce two concepts here and ask you to define each. All right, so the first is, what is power? What is power?
Ability to change.
Ability to control.
Ability to control.
Influence.
To influence.
Authority.
To change. Authority.
Well, there's two kinds. One is the kind of boss who throws their weight around and expects you to respect them. And the other one is one who earns your respect. And that person really is powerful. It's just what's in the way.
The power of control.
One is authentic leadership, one is an abusive or abusive power.
What is power?
The ability to get the job done.
If a person has power over you, what gives them that power?
You give it to them.
Right. Not always.
Well, let's talk about that. You give it to them, not always. So let's start with you give it to them. Go ahead.
I think, well, it goes back to authority as well. I mean, you know, if you recognize a person has authority or the charisma or whatever, you give them that power. You allow them to have that power over you so that they ask you to do something, you want to do it because of whatever those dynamics are.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that last sentence in a second. So, and what's the other view? Who came up with the other side?
Kind of steamroll.
Well, I just said something about with somebody, their position in an institution by virtue of their office or their job description. Like I'm thinking of
the paycheck.
Yeah, their job description. So they have to hire. They can hire and fire. At least have guns.
So if power is around getting you to do something that maybe you didn't want to do to begin with, then power is how the person gets you to do what you may or may not want to do.
I feel like there's something about leverage in it. I mean, if you think of it as a force, you know, power is like a force that it can leverage, it can change things, move things, shut things, you know. Mm-hmm.
All right, so let me just give you a little continuum here of power. So let's say on one end of this continuum we have something that is coercive. And on the other end of the continuum we have something that is persuasive. So you think about power, that is, to get individuals to do something, one can coerce them, that is, that they might have leverage that they're the boss and they control your paycheck and therefore you must do it or you will lose your job, or maybe they're physically stronger than you and so by force of their ability to injure you, you do what you need to do, or perhaps they have great control over large weapons or armies of people, and because of the power that they have and your own life or death, you will succumb and do what is necessary because they have coerced you. So that is one continuum in terms of the power line. Now, persuasive is what? You decide to do it. They have given you a set of reasons that are convincing, either intellectually or emotionally, and so you agree and you do it.
Or there's trust. I mean, I'll tell you, a friend of mine, Ruth Ives, she passed away, but she ran a community housing improvement program in the state of Maine, and she would say, we took mission trips there, and she would say, Tim, I need you to pull these two trailers together and put a roof over. And I'd get out there in this place. I mean, the last thing they needed was that done because the place was falling apart. But I would do it because I trusted Ruth's judgment. And that was the inspiration behind it. And then maybe years later, I figured out what's going on there. But it made no sense in terms of construction-wise to do what she asked. But she understood something that I didn't, so there was a real trust understanding.
All right, so now let's go to this other dynamic. Several of you use this word, authority. What is authority? As distinct from power. What is authority?
That's the red button. It's the hire and fire. It's the vote. Anything that technically puts gives them the say-so.
Would you say Ruth had authority?
Yes, but I would say I gave her that. Again, it's a gift I gave to her, just as power was. Yeah. Yeah, definitely, I probably didn't call it authority, but it certainly was authority.
Any other thoughts about that? Those
some
two.
People have authority based on just the office they hold. They've achieved this position, and that gives them that authority. And there's another side where people are given authority by people who trust them.
Okay, so let's...
Combination. So let's, earned authority?
Let's call it formal to informal. Actually, let me go the other way around. Formal to informal. So another continuum, maybe less gray. Formal authority is that which is explicitly given by virtue of a position one holds. With that position come certain duties, responsibilities. They are understood. They're explicit. Formal. Informal is the conferred authority to an individual on the basis of what?
Trust.
Trust.
Relationship.
Respect.
History.
Competence.
History.
Experience.
Money.
Common goals. Money.
Knowledge.
Knowledge. So for a variety of reasons, we followers, if we use that language, agree to confer the authority on an individual to do something on our behalf.
Or to tell us what to do.
or to tell us what to do, and we follow. All right, so you can think then about this kind of a matrix of power and authority, formal to informal. Think about the leader that you just decided was an effective leader, and just for a minute, mentally plot them there. Where would you put them? Anybody in this quadrant? Formal, positional, coercive? Anybody there? Effective leader? Was Adolf Hitler an effective leader? Coercive, formal.
Yes. Our view of somebody in which quadrant they go may depend on an awful lot of what we think our position is vis-a-vis them. So that I would place the person that I'm talking about in one quadrant. Some of the people that she crossed would place her down there.
It's subjective.
Right, right. It doesn't matter really what your political persuasion is. You're going to plot Barack Obama on this continuum somewhere. And for some people, he is given the authority because he was elected, because we believe in the rules, and the rules elected him president, and so we give him formal authority. And others will say, well, yes, he was elected president, but I trust him. I think he has integrity. I think he has a vision. I think he's intelligent. Or whatever reasons you have in your relationship with the individual have identified that you're going to give him informal authority. So a person can have formal position. And the followers could not really confer, beyond the description explicitly, the job description, they could not have confer authority beyond that job description. Often leaders, you know, sitting in a president's role, you can't get a darn thing done on the basis of the job description. If the faculty don't decide to give the president informal authority, nothing will happen. Or in your school, if the faculty decide they're not going to give the principal, you know, that additional informal authority, nothing's going to happen. It's just one way to think about it. Okay, so second area, and this is just one dynamic as we start to formulate a definition of leadership, and as we go on during our hour here together, the goal is to find for yourself a definition that you think is going to describe leadership from your perspective. So now let's go to traits. Some of the ideas that you put out there dealt with leadership traits. So what are the traits of an effective leader?
Charismatic and managing.
Charisma.
Honesty.
Integrity.
Openness.
Creativity.
Transparency.
Ability to communicate.
Ability to communicate.
Specifically, a vision, whether that's explicitly stated or not.
So to communicate a vision, so effective communication. Other traits.
Flexibility. Altruistic.
Unpack that.
A sense of giving, a generosity, a small ego, big sense of generous spirit and caring.
So this would be Paul instead of Saul. That is, you know, the willingness to say, I'm really the least in this organization, that self-deprecation, placing the organization above self.
Sense of humor.
Authenticity.
These are two words that are relatively recent words in the lexicon of leadership. Transparency and authenticity. And the third one, which is accountability, right? The trinity of new words, right? New words. You won't find them in the leadership literature until just the past few years. Any other traits?
There's something about, for me at least, commitment to the process. That is, if you establish an inclusive process, you'll get the best possible result. If you begin with a decision already made and try to force people into that, there'll be dissatisfaction along the entire path.
You're going to enjoy Wednesday.
There's also reputation. What precedes whatever is coming now will have a big impact on how you perceive it.
So that is the experience or the reputation that the leader brings.
If you have a reputation for a fantastic speaker, I'm more likely to come listen to you than someone who says, yeah, he's a snoozer.
We'll see how many show up for the second one.
Right. Yeah. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. It'll be a nice day. All right. Anything else? All right, let me just share some of what research has told us. First trait is intelligence. What is intelligence? Vis-a-vis leadership. What is
ability? The ability to offer sound logic.
All right, so there's a logic that is part of the persuasive power of the individual.
I think there's a background of knowledge, broad-based knowledge.
So that's, what is knowledge? What would that be for a leader?
Information and literature, just different disciplines that she would have.
So there's technical knowledge, right? This particular leader might know a lot about the tenure system, okay? So that's something that's a very particular technical knowledge. Then there's also the knowledge born of experience. So, you know, I can say when you come in as a first-year president, you don't come in with necessarily the group believing you have intelligence. You judge that over time. But if you've served as a president somewhere else and you come in, then there's some intelligence that's ascribed to whether or not you really are. It's put there.
You have to have a clear grasp of the group's purpose or mission. Understand what is wanted and needed that you're offering your leadership for. So
something more, the technical competence. What is understanding? What does that mean? Understanding the organization?
I think there's also this ability to synthesize information and to then apply it.
And see the big picture.
Right.
How about curiosity? So that you don't have they talk about dead libraries and living libraries, and a living library is always evolving and changing, and I'm thinking of intelligence. You know, you can have someone that knows A to Z on world history, but if they aren't learning anything else, they have a very narrow band of intelligence. I mean, the curious, creative learner is someone that's just got their hand in all kinds of interesting aspects.
So the ability to synthesize, creative or innovative, critical thinker, or the ability to put a critical lens on and understand
open.
A problem. Openness.
Openness.
What about common sense?
What is common sense?
I think it's the ability to take intelligence and information and communicate it in such a way that it makes sense to people.
So it's that the coming back to the logic, that is the sense you're making, is so
it's
clear that it persuades you.
Right.
Yes?
You've got a long list of things there. You've got to share the information before it becomes valuable. You've got to be able to disseminate it.
So that's the communication. That's the communication piece. On this word understanding, there's the understanding of the organization, but how about the understanding of the individuals? Emotional intelligence. So, all right, so intelligence is beyond the technical, critical, and synthetic, that is the ability to understand emotionally where individual or where a group of people might be.
And yourself.
And then respond to that sense. So there's an intuitive intelligence. That's Daniel Goldman. So you can take that theorist and push that along. So that's one, intelligence. All right, the next would be one that I heard here, which is self-confidence. Tomorrow, we'll learn about Ernest Shackleton. That's a story of self-confidence and how a leader will carry that, whether or not they actually have self-confidence or they are confident in themselves. They project to those in the organization a sense of self-confidence, and then folks are willing to confer informal authority on them because they appear to have self-confidence, which gets us to that question of authenticity. And you'll see that over and over again in leaders. Yes?
That's related to charisma as well, the self-confidence.
That's part of that, that they can project that energy.
I have a question, and that is, are leaders inherently good followers in different situations?
Anybody want to take that one on?
There's an opinion over here, I think.
All right, so that begs the question, can a leader follow? You should see whatever.
Depends on the role.
See what happens when all the university presidents get together.
Well, I think a good leader can be a good follower because of the understanding piece. They understand what it takes to be a follower, and therefore thus makes them a better leader. So I would argue that for a good leader, they had a sense of understanding that could make them a follower.
I guess the question is there a correlation between leadership and follower?
I can't tell you that I've seen the research on that to be able to tell you that definitively. It is a good question, and one maybe over the course of the week we'll continue to probe.
You have to understand what a good leader has to understand what it means when somebody's following them.
Right.
So
they have to understand what it means, right? Following leaders.
Certainly a leader that has self-knowledge might make a better follower than one who is self-confident without self-knowledge. The next characteristic is determination, persistence. As my wife would say, you know, the ability to be almost zombie-like in your goal, you know, to be very clear about what it is that you're doing and to pursue it to the very end. So that's a characteristic that is often a trait of leadership, that a leader will see the job through. And as a follower, you trust that they will do that. You have seen evidence to convince you that they will see it through, that they will get it done. Okay, next, yes.
Is that one of the possible good-bad traps? Because determination can be seen as coercion. I'm going to run over you to get what I want done.
There's no question about it. That some, if things are not in the right balance, or for the wrong reasons, then you know, when you get to the issue of morality applied to leadership, that determination could be in some instances unethical, irresponsible, and coercive, yeah, without question. All right, the next one, several of you said integrity. And those words are trust, honesty, those that whole constellation of people do what they say they're going to do. They are authentic. You believe them, and by example and action, they appear to be who they say they are. So there's that sense over and over and over again. And a leader that compromises integrity is lost, as you have seen on more than one occasion. The last is sociability. People will debate this one. Sociability is that sense of being friendly, outgoing, easy or accessible to interact with. Some would say that's the emotional intelligence, that they can empathize. So they have that sociability or that social skill. Those are, again, just taking all the ideas that came around. Every one of you touched on each of these, and the research over close to 100 years would yield these as the common traits of leaders. There are other ways of thinking about leadership, skill sets, and there are theories that deal with skills that leaders have. There are styles. So some would say that it's not who the leader is, it's the style that they use that makes them a leader. Some will say that it is situational or contextual, which Patricia talked about a little earlier today, that which is contextual or contingent, that it might be that there's a leader for a certain time, a certain organization, and a certain place, rather than there is a monolithic leader that somehow we need to discover in each organization. So there are a lot of theories that deal with that issue. And then there are those leadership theories that deal with the relationship of the leader and the follower. And that's some of what we're getting at here when we talk about power and authority and how a leader interacts in that. Some that I think are applicable, but maybe some you've studied. Servant leadership. Anybody read Robert Greenleaf's book on servant leadership? We'll talk about that on Friday. So that's a way of thinking about leadership that we'll explore in the Christian perspective. And then the final one I'd like to spend a little bit of time on in detail is one by James McGregor Burns, 1978, and it's held up pretty well as a way of thinking about leadership. And as we go through this, again, see how all the pieces start to come together. Burns talks about transformational. Transactional. And the final one I'll just put down here, laissez-faire. What does it mean when a leader is transformational?
They inspire change. They are a bridge of some kind.
All right, so inspiration, change, that has something to do with changing. What else would you say is transformation?
We can turn something around.
Turn something around.
Coach and mentor.
Coach, a mentor. So that turns things on where the perspective of the follower.
I think transformation also has a vision larger than whatever it is you're doing. You could be making widgets, but the leader is, in a way, making that part of a larger good, so to speak. I don't know if I'm onto that.
Yep.
Said that right. But.
So it's something that lifts beyond what's expected.
What a paradigm shift.
Right. A change in paradigm, something, a new way, innovation, a way of thinking or doing something that people hadn't achieved before.
It's an element of creativity.
So it's something innovative, creative.
I'm trying to distinguish it from my own thinking from change. Change is kind of rearranging things that are already there. Transformation is a whole new setting, a whole new room, a whole new concept or something, yeah.
An organization would be changing the culture.
Okay, so it's something that it has a newness to it, an innovation. Anything else in terms of thinking about a transformational leader? Would any of you describe the person that was on your list as a transformational leader? Mm-hmm. Yes? Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing a little bit about your story?
The woman that I'm thinking of is a neighborhood, I'll just use the word organizer for lack of a better word. She, over 20 years that I've lived in this neighborhood, is always looking ahead to the next new big idea, and she's had several over the years, and her latest is sustainability, and she is just in her quiet, unassuming, small egotistical, so altruistic way, leading the community into a new idea, a new way of living, by with just small grassrootsy kind of conversational and informational materials. So she's leading in a very quiet, and it's just a wonderful, she's transforming the way people think in a very grassroots way.
How does she make you feel?
Hopeful.
And what does she make you do?
She is a bridger, you know, she's someone that brings disparate people in a community, unlike Holden does, bring all of us together. You know, it's a place in which people from all walks of life come together, and she gets us all talking and sharing and brainstorming ideas, and there's a support element in that.
Would you describe her as charismatic?
Not in the way that our culture would. She's kind of got that quiet, unassuming kind of confidence.
What is charisma? Might want to take that one on? What's charisma?
Something engaging. I mean, something that just makes you engage and want more of or something. I don't know.
Is charisma something that the leader generates or something that happens in you?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Both.
The latter.
Both.
Charism is a gift.
Charisma wouldn't that kind of inspire us to, I mean, it's a person that will inspire us to be good followers.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily that somebody that's, you know, got a lot of stage presence and a big voice. But there's something about what they say, how they say it, what they do that generates a...
They're compelling.
Mm-hmm. Compelling.
Mm-hmm. Who was it you said, be the change that you want to see? Mm-hmm. So if you're that kind of a leader, you embody in a kind of a total way, you develop a commitment to you to embody that which you're trying to attain. So if people can sense that, if you're that present to your vision and determined, I think that those things help make a person influential, which I think is charismatic. People want to be around that.
But what you said, big stage, big voice, that's what I think people think charisma is. And for me, that's under some subheading of phone authenticity. And if just, good to great the book, his conclusion was, that isn't what makes for a good leader. It is more the quiet, unassuming, the other words he wrote, determination, vision, integrity, those things. But if we want to redefine charisma as that, that's okay. But what I think you said is what we think of as charisma, as good leadership, that brash, outspoken person. That wears thin really quickly, for me.
Can you comment on the back? Behind the door. Did I see your hand up there a little while? Okay, Mark.
I have a question.
Yes. Yes.
Well, there's an old word, temperament, that Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. used about Franklin Roosevelt, the second class intellect, but the first class temperament. I wonder if that was before we used words like charisma and started using that, especially in the child. But there's a sense how the transformation, since you're using the two greater burns, transformational leadership in the Depression and in World War II was done all those ways, but it wasn't huge charisma, it was out of a little box, a microphone. It was a huge gesture.
It seems like there's something intangible, there's something that's very hard to describe about somebody that can speak and communicate. There's something relational for me, because it isn't what you're saying. You know, it's not star quality, but it's something, I don't know, it's hard.
Well, I'm saying it's not star quality.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that. It's something else that's very hard to describe. What it is about, it's what makes anything speak to you.
It's
music or anything.
It's authenticity.
Making a connection.
A connection, that's good.
Let me throw this up on the board and see if it starts to capture or give you a framework to get your arms around all of these things that are here, because it doesn't conform necessarily to what a stereotype is. It's far more complicated than that. So here we go. The first piece is a transformational leader has idealized influence. Be the change, that they behave in an ideal way that people want to emulate. That's one dimension of that transformational leader. There's a kind of idealized influence. People watch the leader. They watch their mood, their body language, the words that they speak, all the acts that they do, and they judge on a regular basis about whether or not the person is behaving as they wish to be. And so that idealized influence is one dynamic. The second is inspirational. That is, that they motivate. They challenge people to do something that is beyond what they think they're capable of doing. But because they do it with determination and enthusiasm and a vision and a sense of what it could be, people actually go beyond what they thought they were capable of doing. So that sense of being inspirational, and not that they're doing something, but they are exciting in you a capacity to imagine something that you just didn't think was possible. A new paradigm, a new way of working. All right, the third is intellectual stimulation. Th- the transformational leader is able to get each of us to think about a creative way or an innovative way of getting there. That is, each individual has a sense of being empowered by the leader to solve the problem, to get the organization or the individual where they need to get to. So that sense of intellectually, I as an individual, intellectually stimulated and motivated to go further. And then the final, get the language here, individualized consideration. That the transformational leader is able to listen very carefully to what people in an organization are thinking and what they believe, and then are able to meet them where they are, not just as an organization, but as individual people. And that goes back to some of those early things about remembering names, just small things that might connect that leader to the individual so that people feel like this is about me and I can do this and I want to do this individually because the leader has heard what I had to say. So Burns describes the transformational leader as some convergence of these various characteristics and ways of working. All right, now let's contrast that with transactional. And just take a moment, and you might think of leaders that aren't effective or that you encountered in your work, in your church, in your school. The first is the element of contingent reward. And that is, you will do something for this leader because they tell you, if you do this, I'll give you this. So it is a transaction. You do this, and you get a raise. You do this, and you get a bonus. You do this, and you get a course load reduction. You do this, and whatever your milieu is. But that sense of contingent reward. Transactional leaders use contingent reward. The other is management by exception. And here, you have both active and passive. And I know as I describe this, you will know these people. Management by exception always looks for what individuals will do wrong. And active means they follow you around and they wait for you to do. They're just saying, yep, no, you're going to do that wrong. And they correct. They're always over your shoulder and correcting as you go. The passive management by exception leader waits until you make a mistake. And then they get you. So those are transactional leaders. You do something, and then there's a negative reinforcement that occurs. Laissez-faire, you know these as well. They just let the organization go wherever people want it to go. Whatever you want to do, folks. My wife would describe this as my transaction with my children. When we all get together, I say, well, whatever you want to do. So that's laissez-faire. Yes, Gary.
What does a transformational leader do when they see things go wrong? Is it management by exception? Do they actively deal with the issue, or do they passively deal with the issue?
I think that they would use, this skill set would be used here, that you don't just listen and then off you go, but there's always that checking in and monitoring and adjusting and still, and you'll see this for Shackleton, that he's always monitoring and adjusting the mood and trying to respond to keep people moving forward. I don't think you'd find much in the way of that negative reinforcement. That would be fairly rare, and generally when that happens, the organization will tell the leader almost immediately that the leader's made a mistake. That they've compromised their informal authority, or they've spent their capital with the organization, and so then you have to earn it back. But this would generally be considered to be a violation of process, or something in that direction. So what I'd like you to think about as we wrap up here today is, there are lots of people that theorize about leadership. What is leadership to you? How would you define it for yourself? And I'll give you one definition, and let that be something to resonate with you as you go off and think about this, and maybe over the course of the week we can talk about it. This is from a researcher whose name is Joe Rost. He's got a book called Leadership in the 21st Century. This is a 93 book, and he is undertaken, I think, is the most thorough understanding of the leadership literature. He's really analyzed the literature in this book. And he says, all right, I'll take a stab at it. The leadership is an influence relationship among leaders and followers. So leadership is not about the leaders. It's about this relationship among leaders and followers who intend, leadership is intentional, real changes. Leadership is about change that reflect their mutual purposes. Mr. President, what's your vision? Mutual purposes. So a vision is something that is ascertained together. So just in closing today, I'll put that out there for you to think about. And again, to use that, does that reflect a way of thinking that effective leader, does that model the way that effective leader worked for you? Are there pieces of this that perhaps, I'm not going to ask you to answer that. Are there pieces of this perhaps that your effective leader, that you didn't see in the way that effective leader worked? They were still effective, but perhaps other dimensions might be developed.
Yeah. Why do you have leaders and followers? Is that like a super leader somehow, or?
A leader, I think Ross would say a leader can't exist without followers.
Right.
So a leadership only occurs in the relationship. That leadership is actually in the space between. There's a whole theory called leader-follower stage theory that goes there. But that the whole crux of leadership is there, between.
Oh, I guess my question is, why is it plural? Why is leaders plural?
I think he's describing, in general terms, all organizations. Although I think it is reasonable to say that in any organization there are multiple leaders operating, some with formal positions, some informally because they have earned the trust and respect of their colleagues, and they may not have a formal position, but they have tremendous influence.
There's also the hierarchy. I mean, there are hierarchical leaders, right? The president, chancellor, whatever.
You know, you think about your workplace or your school or your college or your congregation.
Marriage.
Or your marriage. All right. And you can see that dimension of those people who have authority and who are conferred additional authority beyond their job description to get things done, and those that you have limited to the boundaries of their job description. And if they step over that, whew, it gets hot. And people who have no job description at all, but when they speak, everybody listens, they're very persuasive, and the room can be changed.
Yep.
So leadership can happen in a lot of places in an organization. And with that, I'd encourage you to think and talk about it. I'll be happy to answer questions that you have. And tomorrow, we'll tell you the story of a group of sailors who got stuck in the ice and 2 years later came out. Blessings on your evening. Thank you.
Yeah.